Okay, just turning this thing on again, and well, it's something there about cosmology. Like to see or realize or the these quantum physicists accepted the holistic view. Outlook on the world, but then how they got consciousness included there in that oneness, which of course has to be there, because you know, if you take those two, now I'm just going here, two insights, which I guess they got from their experiments and the developments in physics, right? So we can just leave that up to Bohm. And if you want to get convinced, then you can read his books. There's a lot of writings about his theory. Once you have that, and again, it was not just him, so we can work here on that chapter or section about the holistic view to establish that strongly. And you got that. And then you got the unavoidable conclusion that consciousness is fundamental. Both those two we have basically established. I mean, not just me going blah blah new age, but we're talking quantum physics here, serious stuff. So once those two are accepted, if you can accept them, and if you can't, if you find it very hard, then just consider this also accepted in physics, that what we call the atom is 99.999% empty space, which means the ground I'm walking on now, the trees, the bushes, the cars hardly exist. And when you say this, most people, they just click off. They may think this is some freak pseudo-scientific theory or whatever, but it isn't. it's a kind of commonly accepted fact of modern science. So I would say what is needed now, what these quantum physicists just started doing, because their lives were limited too, their time, was to get a glimpse of that, to accommodate that thought, so to speak, in their math. Even they were able to do that because these were their tools. But then from there, I say, and it's quite obvious. One has to continue by walking a different path than that established by physicalist science. Because, for instance, consciousness is fundamental. That's consciousness. How can we study it? What instruments do we need to study consciousness, to measure it, to detect it? And of course, that's what the physical scientists do, and then they say, we didn't see anything, so it didn't exist. It doesn't exist. It's just religion, faith. So you go to the church instead. But that is their limitation and error caused by that limitation, of course, of only allowing oneself mentally, intellectually, to accept even the possibility of an existence. That is only physical, and that there is no existence beyond. Which means that you design instruments for detecting the physical, and they are physical. But then quantum physics came with the to that startling insight that which is of course obvious when you think of it, that the observer is included in the experiment. And that's basically how they came to this conclusion, that consciousness is fundamental. Now, what has to be done at that point, and which some of them started doing by, for instance, turning to Indian Vedantic philosophy, is to change one's viewpoint. Not to put oneself in a different position and be ready to accept different tools and scientific methodology. Why? Well, because consciousness, and we all know it, it just has to be said sometimes, consciousness is not an object to be studied. It is the subject. It's us who study. So the way to move on, the physicists and whoever they are now, what they call themselves, where they hit the wall, so to speak, you could say the edge of the physical world, is to study consciousness from right where we are, here within. Because we are consciousness, we are conscious, and we have the ability in interestingly enough, to, what do you call it, self, there's a word for it that I just stumbled upon the other day. Anyway, I can find it. It's written in the book, or at least part of it. You know, to study ourselves, to look at ourselves, so we can scientifically study ourselves with the same scientific methodology, observation and evidence and proof and experiments, all that, but from here where we are, inside, or in as that consciousness, as ourselves. And I would say that just as the physical is science, proudly relied on, at least that's what I learned when I started learning science, on empiricism. That which you can see and experience with your senses is real. And if you can repeat an experiment and others can see and experience the same thing, then it is a proof. But here we're also talking empiricism, but I would say real, absolute even empiricism, because the observation, you know, now I'm talking to the scientific minded people, experimental, you know, the observation, scientific methodology, it's not done by the physical senses, or limited to that level of the physical senses. But it's done from the self proper, from us here within. And that's a very different, a very important and different point of view, and change your point of view, which is not difficult to make. Because when you look from where you are, empirically studying the world, without, you know, blocking out anything due to cognitive dissonance, whatever, you know, the bias that only the physical exists, I will only accept what's, you know, on the retina of my eyes and so on, the physical sense perceptions, but also the, you know, and then they just kind of, I don't know how they handle the fact of the inner life of us. But I guess they explained it away as just some illusion appearing in the brain. But how could I be an illusion? So that's where we are. So once you can step over that threshold of accepting the consciousness is fundamental, then it's easier to take that step. Yes, here I am. And I will now go on with my scientific studies. But from this point of view, from me, from the conscious being here, when I make an experiment, whatever kind of experiment it is, well, that includes me too. Can't get away from that, and so on. So anyway, by doing that, remembering also what the quantum grandfather said, it's consciousness is fundamental. Because whatever we do, however we twist and turn, it's always us. Back in the at the end of the line, who are the conscious observers, right? Now we're all talking a bit around, you know, these quantum physics terms, because I find it interesting what happened back then. And it's still valid, I would say. So, it means that the worldview that starts to appear here, once we do this, take that step, change that viewpoint, become, I would say, first of all, much clearer and makes much, you know, and makes quantum physics make more sense, which it didn't before. It is that, yes, here I am, conscious observer, and I have sense perceptions, I have a mental image of some world now, a world that exists less by having a rigid objective existence on its own, you know, this heavy stone there, it exists as a heavy thing. They're made of these atoms that are heavy when you put many of them together. That kind of view, because that's the one that was broken up by quantum physics, remember? But rather, you can deal with it much the way Bohr did, only as our experience of it, which of course then becomes a bit strange, because does this world not then have any objective existence independent of my experience of it? And that's where Bohm took over and brought it one step further, although he did not crack the secret either, but they were step by step on the way. But here I am, and I have experiences in my senses. I see things, and that's some kind of, again, holographic, holistic light field here containing information that somehow or other gets decoded into an image in my mind. That's the fact. Same with hearing and the other senses, including touch. Of me walking on a ground right now, that's just a touch sensation, that's all I know. And of course it appears an objective in the sense that it's a ground here that seems independent of me, because it's here every day and you can see it on satellite images. It's there for all of us. who live here. But nevertheless, 99.999% empty space, and can only be understood as my experience of it right now. Now then, Bohm takes that one step further by saying that you can't say that it only exists as your experience. Well, I mean, first of all, many of us have that experience. There is an objective feature to this existence that we call the material world, right? And yes, that's how those men drifted into Indian Vedantic philosophy. Not because they all went nuts, but because they saw something. And therefore we say here, and that's where we start this book, by studying that, by looking at that worldview. And now trying to fit in what they found with that worldview. Which we who write this book, happen to be more acquainted with, having studied it our own whole lives. And from there, naturally, almost as a surprise, finding these quantum physicists who came from that direction into this same. World that we live in. So, if any of that makes sense to you, we could move on to another recent, fairly recent, maybe 10-20 years old development within modern physics and, well, philosophy, and I would say psychology, namely the simulation theory. Could be good. You should all read about it, but we make a touchdown there now and then, and lead people to an awareness of the Bhagavatam and the Vedantic philosophy and all that, maybe then raising an interest in studying it further. Not that therefore you should all read the books by Srila Bhakti. So that's a good way of doing it, right? So touching upon that, now we spent a whole part there with the Puranic cosmos, and now after that we can go look at here now, and then kind of touch it and back to, oh, we said like this there, and remember the Bhagavatam said like that. That's a good strategy. And a And then we show that this simulated reality view, first of all, show the, you know, it might, I'm back in writing mode here. Now this is fairly speculative, I know, but it has gained some rather how do you say, a family of some rather prominent intellectuals today around it, and among others Elon Musk. And okay, back to conceptual. So we can put it like this, how if we can see it that way, that yes, something along that line, it fits with the quantum physics, because but here we take one step further, comparing this entire world with a virtual reality. We already had it as a hologram, but in a way a hologram is a virtual reality, virtual image, because it's not projected on a paper as an image or so, but it's arising in our minds without having any physical form there, like that 3D image on a hologram. So it really exists just as in a VR world, a game, whatever you play. As some energy that affects our consciousness and paints an image in our minds. And how we can get into the VR and explain what that is. Where you are, a consciousness, you have a consciousness there which is real, fundamental, existing apart from these forms of the physical, and where the physical forms, the physical realm, is more of a medium where images appear from some higher intelligence, some higher, very, very sophisticated information structure And the proof of that is everything we see around us. It's incredibly beautifully and intelligently formed and upheld. Just look at nature around us. So there, Bohm came to that insight. You got a conscious observer of the quantum physics. You got a conscious observer, a unified field realm world that we experience, and some imagery there of some kind of holographic nature or whatever. Now, if we step over here, we basically have the same concept, the same thing, but we have taken the, which I just discussed, this step, the natural step over to looking at the world from behind the mind and the physical. Realizing that what we experience is really going on in the mind. An image in the mind, in whatever way that image was developed, maybe on its own as an hallucination, maybe from the image of the senses, which and that appearing in this electromagnetic field of the brain, this holographic image. Deep of another reality. We remember from the Puranas, deities, and the one we experience at a certain moment in our minds, with our consciousness, depends on which level of existence of the world, of the cosmos, we are right now focused on. Something like that.